Hi, and welcome back to the Flow State Podcast, where we're all about finding balance in your everyday life. We're your hosts, Monica Groney
and Nora Candido.
All right, let's get into the flow. Today, we are talking about the menstrual cycle and all of its wonderful phases. So excited to dive into this topic. I feel like it's something I didn't learn until my mid-20s. And if there's one thing that I could go back and learn earlier, it would probably be this.
I couldn't agree more. This is information that everybody should have access to. I label this as like meet your cycle. It's kind of like hormones 101. And it's the health class that we all deserve to have. It doesn't just have to be for menstruating people. I think the more that we understand about this, the better that we can support our own bodies, our partners, everybody else.
Yeah. So today we're going to dive into each phase of the cycle. If you're unaware, there are four phases in total and why we even have a cycle, what is driving our cycle, and the main event of our cycle, which is so important. I'm coming to find out as I try to have a baby.
Ovulation is what you're speaking to, right?
Yes. Ovulation. Ovulation is, I call it the main event. I think it's like the true sign of a healthy cycle is ovulation. So yeah, let's dive into all of that. Okay, where do we even start? Where do we start, Nora?
Yeah, I was even going to open it up by saying, like, depending on who you ask, they might say there are four phases. Some people say there are three. Some people say there are two. So I even just kind of want to intro that by saying, like, it's kind of dependent on who you're talking to about these things. But, you know, the purpose that we even get a cycle in the first place is for the potential to procreate, to house and grow a human. Like, our bodies, as menstruating, as people with uteruses, can grow a freaking human in our body. Like, it's so mind-boggling to me that we can even do this thing.
Yeah. One of my best friends just had a baby and she's like, she had a boy and she was like, I grew a penis. Like, I mean, it's so true. If you think about it, like as females, we can literally not only have grown our own organs, but when we make a baby, we like grow a whole other set of them and like whole other genitalia, whole other brain. Like, it's so crazy. It truly is a magical thing.
Yeah. I think even a good place to start is just identifying, you know, there's two really main hormones that are kind of the conductors, if this looks like an orchestra, and that is estrogen and progesterone. So estrogen is the one that is doing a lot of the prep work for building up that uterine lining, where if we were to get pregnant, that is where the baby is going to be housed in that uterine lining. It's providing nutrition. Initially, it provides like this, what I envision to be a soft and squishy bed for that little egg to nest in. And progesterone is what maintains that once we are actually pregnant or once ovulation occurs. It's like, okay, I take over from here. Progesterone is more in the second half of our cycle, and it has a very calming effect. So estrogen might make us feel a little bit more anxious. So if you notice you have higher energy in the first half of your cycle, and we're going to dive into what even the first half of your cycle is, you might have higher energy, higher appetite, want to be more social. And then maybe in that second half of your cycle, you are feeling a little less energetic, maybe turning inward a little bit more, more reflective. And that can be due to that calming effect of progesterone as well.
I think that's so interesting too. If we think about why we need our hormones to be balanced, is that we need both of them truly. Like, and when they're out of balance, meaning like, you know, just not in a good ratio of each other, that's when we get symptoms, because our body's trying to tell us that if we were to try and conceive, we don't have the proper estrogen or progesterone to either like build the lining or then to maintain the lining. So they're all just signals to telling us if our body is in a good place or not, kind of for what it's meant for. And I think what you said earlier too about there being different trains of thought on how many phases there are in the cycle. Maybe let's just dive right in to some of the phases, because I think it is really interesting, like ovulation can be within another phase and then like, you know, they kind of like group together, but we're going to dive into that and talk about all of them.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the biggest piece for me when I started learning about all of this was day one of our cycle is the day that you start bleeding. Because of being on hormonal birth control and that last row of pills, I was like, okay, the end of my cycle is when I bleed. And it's literally the inverse. So, you know, even if you're starting to think about getting pregnant or you're thinking about coming off the pill or just wanting to learn more about your cycle, knowing that day one of your cycle is actually day one of your bleed.
Yeah, that was so true to me as well, because when we're put on birth control, that's kind of when we start to like count the days and understand the days, because you have this like wheel of pills that you have to take, but it always ends with your period. And so you're like, okay, the first day of my cycle is the first day I'm not bleeding, but no, that is not correct.
Yeah, it's the opposite. Yeah, and the whole cycle, just to kind of give an overview, we talked about this a little bit, is it can be anywhere between 21 to 35-ish days. And then even there's so much variation within how long people bleed for. So your menstrual bleed, that event, can be anywhere between 3 days to some people experience it for 8+ days. And that gives us a lot of information into your fertility status, your health. We can talk about color, consistency, are there clots in your blood? All of those things are all really, really important pieces of information when we're talking about your menstrual cycle. But that phase itself, and yes, that event, the bleed, can really be seen as an event within the start of our follicular phase. So we'll dive into those differences too. So the menstrual bleed and the menstrual phase comes first, but that bleed can be under the umbrella of the follicular phase.
Yeah. Do you mind if we just tangent a little bit right now? Because you said that the length of the bleed can tell you a lot. Can you maybe just like highlight like a short bleed versus a long bleed? What is that telling someone?
Totally. So if we have a short bleed, that might mean that there is insufficient lining. If there is not really enough lining to shed, if it's really scant, you might read those words, or if it's light, that can be a sign that our estrogen can be lower, which again, we need that estrogen in order to build the lining, in order to get pregnant. So depending on what your goals are, but that is a marker of our health. We don't really want to have shorter than a 3-day bleed. You can still have a normal bleed at 3 days. I don't want to scare anyone, but 3 to 7-ish days is the most, quote, normal or common. And then if it's longer, that can also mean other things. Why is it taking so long for your body to shed that lining, right? Can we look into this prolonged piece? Do you have any types of anemia that are occurring because you're bleeding for longer? Things like that. So, you know, looking at that cycle length, or excuse me, the bleed length, is really, really an important marker for health status.
Super interesting. I didn't know that. I'm learning so much already. Okay, so the menstrual phase, you mentioned it is an or can be considered the start of the follicular phase. So what, I mean, our uterine lining is shedding, we're bleeding, what else is going on?
Yeah, so I talked a little bit, like our energy levels can be a little bit lower during this phase. We might notice that. And something we also might notice, if we get those period poops, I know we talked about this in one of the first few episodes, and we can talk more on it too, but there is this inflammatory process that is happening in order for our body to shed that lining. So it's led by what are called prostaglandins, and that is an inflammatory process, but that's natural. Our body is trying to shed, it's working, but just with that little bit of inflammation and the actual physical movement, everything down there is so close together. So when there's that inflammation and kind of the pulsating going on to shed the lining, that can also cause us to have more loose stools in the beginning of our cycle too.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that for sure. And prostaglandins are the same thing it's a hormone, right?
Yep.
It's what makes our uterus contract. Is that right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that makes sense. If it's something that makes something contract and then it's quite close to our bowels, like, yeah, we might poop a little more. I feel like it just makes sense.
Yeah, it's hormones too. And that, again, inflammatory or a little bit of inflammation. So we can definitely talk more like diet strategies, like incorporating more omega-3s leading up to your cycle to help reduce the amount of inflammation in your next cycle too.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. So leading into your cycle, get on that salmon. Amazing. Okay. So we bleed for 3 to 7-ish days and then we move where? Where are we headed next?
Exactly. So it's kind of that continuation of the follicular phase. So this is the next kind of section of our cycle. And myth busting right here. Not everyone ovulates on day 14. We're not a formula. We're not some magic like system here. So the follicular phase, which is leading up to ovulation, can really range anywhere from another 7 to 10 days. So if you bleed for 3 and then you have a little bit of maybe 1 week until you ovulate, that's only 10 days. So the first half of your cycle could be on the shorter end, or if you bleed for 7 and then you have your follicular phase for 10 days, that's going to be a little bit on the longer end and your whole cycle length might be longer, right? Like I ovulate typically on day 18. I know that because I've tracked my cycle and it's so helpful, but that's normal, completely normal.
Yeah, I'm like a day 13 or 14. I have a shorter cycle. I feel like you and I are on the opposite ends of this. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, which is totally fine. Like it's just differences in our bodies.
Yeah, super cool. Okay, so follicular phase, you're coming like go through your menstrual cycle, you come out of your bleed, and then you start to lead up to ovulation. What is happening with the estrogen and progesterone during the follicular phase?
Yep. So estrogen is kind of climbing. So even right after our menstrual cycle starts, all of our hormones are at their lowest point. And then from there, that estrogen starts to creep up until it's at its peak at ovulation. So if you can picture kind of like a roller coaster, that estrogen is gradually climbing until it has a big, you're all the way at the peak of that roller coaster. And that is typically when ovulation will occur. So that's why even in those first 3 days of the whole cycle within the follicular phase, we are also checking what's called the follicle stimulating hormone if you are trying to conceive. So the follicles live in our ovaries. We're born with all of the eggs that we're ever going to have, which is also so incredible. And the follicles, which house each of the eggs, they really take about 90 days to fully mature. But that follicle stimulating hormone from day 1 through day whenever you ovulate is what is also increasing to grow the follicle that's housing the egg that is going to be chosen to ovulate and be released from your ovary, travel down through the tubes, all the way into your uterus, and that's when ovulation is occurring.
And the estrogen is rising during this time leading up to ovulation because it's building up that cushion, right? It's like creating a bed for the egg to embed in. So it makes sense.
Exactly. I always use this graphic and I put it at the bottom of our document today. And it's such a nice visual. Like I was talking about that roller coaster, but it's kind of similar with that lining as well. It's growing, it's growing, it's growing until the end of our cycle. And then it kind of falls off. And I like seeing that visual process. I think it's really, really helpful to understand what's happening internally, why you might be feeling differently.
For sure. Super interesting. Okay. And then we hit ovulation, which is, I think I didn't learn this honestly until the last maybe 3 years, but this ovulatory window, you ovulate on like one day, but there's an ovulatory window leading up to it. That's really, if you have a regular cycle, that's the caveat. But if you have a regular cycle, It's really the only time you can conceive in your whole cycle.
It is. It is the only time you can conceive. Yeah. So, you know, when we're told in our high school or middle school health class, you can get pregnant at any time, that is so wildly incorrect. But with the caveat we talked about this in one of our previous episodes too, of it can take up to 10 years for those hormones to really regulate. So when you are young, you might ovulate a couple of days after your period ends and things are just not regular yet. But when we are older and when our cycles are really matured and we're trying to conceive, yes, we need to be trying in that ovulatory window. So that window, even up to 5 days before ovulation occurs, is when you are still fertile. You have the highest chances of conceiving 3 days before you ovulate, which makes sense if we're thinking about it, right?
Really? Is that true?
Yes.
3 days before?
Yes.
Okay, wait, let's back it up. What?
Yes, exactly. So if you think about it, if the semen is already in place in your uterine, in the tubes, in the fallopian tubes, and then the egg is released, you have a much higher chance of conception occurring. So the conception is really when sperm meets egg and the two are intertwined, and then it's going to travel down and embed into the uterus, into that lining. If you ovulate, so the egg has already been released, and then the semen and the sperm are coming in, you have less chance. So you can still get pregnant on the day of ovulation and even up to about 24 hours after ovulation occurs. Most women ovulate in the morning. So it's like it's an event, like we were talking about. It's a action. The egg is being released. That is ovulation. But again, those 5 days leading up to it and even 1 or maybe 2 days after ovulation occurs, again, depending on what time of day you are actually ovulating, can determine, because semen and sperm can live inside for up to 5 days. That's why that window, again, this is where there is some variability. It is about like a 72-hour-ish window. So the timing is a little bit tricky to just spell out here, right? If you had sex 5 days leading up to your ovulatory, before your ovulation, you have chance, but those 3 days before is actually the highest chance. 3, 2, and 1 day before, and then 1 day after.
It's also kind of crazy, like your likelihood of getting pregnant, even in those, like your highest likelihood days, is somewhere really only around like 30%.
Correct. Yeah, it's really low.
So like there's a 30% chance on the right day that you might get pregnant. And yet somehow we spend our whole life being scared of getting pregnant. And I know for some people, like it's an accident and it happens really easy, but like the actual statistics of it is kind of a miracle.
Yes, absolutely. I don't remember the stats offhand either, but even after, if you successfully have a pregnancy, I believe it's 1 in 5 naturally miscarries. And that can be due to any sort of reason. If your body says, like, there are some abnormalities here, we are going to, you know, just reabsorb this and start next time. There are different things that can happen there, but I believe it's 1 in 5. Yeah, after even having a successful pregnancy, can naturally miscarry. So yeah, it's totally a miracle when like everything lines up and we create a human. There's a really, really incredible stat I'll have to look up too about like the chances of you even being born, or like, you know, it's so, so small. It's just crazy when you really zoom out and think about it in that way.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, we're born with all the eggs we have. So what are the chances that my egg, me, I was an egg, like was the one that was fertilized? And what are the chances that it was like that one sperm that fertilized me as my egg? Because at the end of the day, I don't know this at all, but I mean, how many sperm?
Oh, hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. So like insane.
Men have so many. Yes. I love this thought too, that like your grandma who birthed your mom, who your mom had the eggs that contained you, So like you really carry a piece of your grandma with you, which I think is a really cool thought.
Yeah, that is really cool. So interesting. So interesting.
But yeah, back to hormones.
Okay, so ovulation, what is the LH hormone? What is that doing? The only reason I know LH is because in the process of trying to conceive, you use LH strips to be able to pinpoint ovulation more. And so LH spikes basically just before ovulation, they say, you know, it's like 24 to 48 hours before. But what is that hormone?
Yeah. So it's called the luteinizing hormone. And that is what is, it's kind of like the flip that is being switched. It is the trigger that is saying, okay, time to release the egg. So you can think of when that LH is spiking, that means ovulation is about to occur. So in my practice and what I teach individuals is actually using basal body temperature tracking because it's far more accurate to see when you actually ovulate based on the temperature change. But those LH sticks can be used, I think, in tandem because it's not going to tell us exactly when it's happening. It's going to be more in line with that window. And again, we're talking about like this is a very specific time frame, very specific window. So trying to get it as most exact as possible, I think using the two methods in tandem is the most helpful.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, you know, we're most likely to conceive kind of those 3 days before we ovulate. So if LH spikes before we ovulate, temperature rises after we ovulate, you can kind of get to know what that window is, that 24 to 48 hour window. And like, that seems like a pretty good time to try if you're trying or avoid if you're avoiding.
Exactly. I wanted to speak a little bit because there's a really cool connection here that our ovary cells are bathed in melatonin, like the sleep hormone. So a really interesting connection here between like our circadian rhythm, which I would love to dive into more at some point, but these cells really like melatonin. So if you have sleep issues or if you're someone that has been taking melatonin to try and sleep, also you can't take melatonin if you're trying to conceive, just FYI. But knowing that our ovary cells really, really like melatonin, and there are even some foods that can naturally boost melatonin. So I was saying there are even foods that are rich in melatonin that can help to support your ovarian health. But just kind of connecting here that there's a relationship between sleep, our circadian rhythm, that melatonin, our natural hormone production, and ovulation. Ovulation is really impacted by stress and cortisol, especially if you are super, super, super stressed. You can have what's called an anovulatory cycle, meaning that you don't ovulate, but you can still get your period, right? Because those events are different, your body is still preparing, it's still building that lining regardless of if you ovulate or not. But with ovulation, if your cortisol is too high, if you are too stressed, your body is going to say, nope, this is not the time for me to be growing a human. So when I work with fertility clients, this is the biggest thing that we focus on is stress management, really making sure that our cortisol is in a good place and that you are ovulating consistently to support your overall fertility chances.
Yeah. And so the sleep, like ovary kind of relationship, I kind of want to like hear more a little bit about it. So people who have sleep problems likely have lower melatonin. Is that what I'm understanding?
Not always. I wouldn't say we can like automatically draw a line between the two, but it can be common. We can have like a melatonin deficiency or be low melatonin for lots of different reasons.
And so that can then affect ovulation because of the cells being held in melatonin?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, like they are like bathed, they're like coated. I just picture it as like a blanket. There's a connection there. So, you know, if you've heard the term circadian rhythm thrown around many, many times, we have lots of different rhythms in our body. Even our menstrual cycle is called an ultrafradian rhythm. It's longer. I have to look at the definition specifically, but we have our circadian rhythm, which is like a 24-hour cycle. And all the cells in our bodies have response to our circadian rhythm. So even our ovarian cells have their own circadian rhythm. So like when we're talking, especially hormone health, fertility health, looking at optimizing your circadian rhythms and helping to make sure that all things are operating in alignment in their routine, that is something that we can really focus on too.
What are some of your like favorite ways to support circadian rhythm?
First thing upon waking is getting light exposure as soon as possible. So that's going to really help to tell our body like, okay, it is daytime. This is especially important. I just got back from traveling and going from different time zones. Trying to eat meals at the time of your destination is very helpful. And even going to bed and waking up at the quote normal times is a really easy way to help reset your circadian rhythm. So that early morning light exposure, and then thinking the other end of the day, trying to minimize light exposure. So even any lighting that is coming from above, our body can't tell the difference between is that coming from the sun or is that coming from a synthetic lamp. So even switching to like lower lighting, turning off the overhead lighting, trying to get off of your phone at least an hour before bed, limiting that blue light, only wearing blue light glasses after the sun goes down, because during the day we actually want that light to pour in to tell our bodies like, nope, it's time to be awake. And then the opposite, when the sun goes down and our body starts naturally producing melatonin, our sleepy hormone, that is what we want to optimize, really, those two times.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is getting outside. Especially in the summer, it's a lot easier, but getting outside first thing in the morning and just being out in the light, it is truly so helpful for sleeping, I think. But those are great, amazing tips.
I also wanted to touch on like some of the benefits of ovulation, because when we're on the pill, we're not ovulating, and that's a really important piece here. And there are benefits for our heart health. It helps with our blood pressure. It actually reduces the risk for heart disease in the future. We have cognitive or brain benefits, and it reduces the risk of dementia. It helps our bone health, reduces risk for osteoporosis, and it can even reduce the risk for breast disease, not just breast cancer, but other breast diseases as well. So, you know, estrogen is really, really important. Like that's the main driver behind all of these things. When we have that surge in estrogen, that's with ovulation. And we don't get that when we're on hormonal birth control because it's being controlled and reduced. So it's just something that I really wanted to call out that like, if you needed a reason, if you needed information or motivation to know why, like, oh, you know, I'm not trying to get pregnant, I don't need to come off the pill or hormonal birth control. Like, there are so many reasons why our body should be ovulating for our health.
Yeah. And if you haven't listened, go back and listen to the birth control episode because there's so much good information in that episode. One of the questions I had about that is when we aren't ovulating, so either you're having anovulatory cycles or you're on the pill, your estrogen isn't rising. Is that right? Because it's not rising to create the ovulation?
Correct. Yep. So when we're taking estrogen from the pill, it is being kind of like maintained at one certain level. So we don't really have any variation throughout the month. And same with an IUD or others. There isn't typically estrogen in an IUD. It's mostly just progesterone. So we might still have some of those estrogen fluctuations, but not typically ovulating still with an IUD. Not all of them. I do want to give that caveat, but it is not typical to ovulate even with something like an IUD.
And so would our bodies, like a non-ovulating female body, are we more similar to a male in that instance, or are we just more similar to like a menopausal woman?
Yeah, it's said when we're on birth control that it's more similar to menopause because we still have more amounts of estrogen and progesterone. Men also have estrogen, but they don't have progesterone. They don't need it. So we're more similar to a menopausal woman because we still have those two primary female hormones, but they are going to be more lower and at a consistent rate and not ovulating.
Yeah, super interesting.
And that's why like risk for dementia and cardiovascular disease and all of those things increases after menopause. It's because of the estrogen decline.
Yeah, super important. Because we're just talking about it, what are some ways to boost estrogen?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to just blanket say like boost estrogen. I would want to know like what your levels are at, or just for menopausal women.
Totally. I mean, I think like you're talking about, you know, when estrogen is low, it can create these higher risks. And for people who have anovulatory cycles and their estrogen isn't rising, like maybe their estrogen is kind of low. Like, what are ways to boost estrogen? I know estrogen dominance is probably more common, but...
Yeah. So that's one where I would 100% want to test before we're making any of those big changes. Like, that's really, really important. So for two different populations here, if you are a menstruating person and we're trying to boost estrogen, I'm going to have different recommendations. There are other things that we can be doing. If you are a menopausal woman and you're trying to reduce the risk for cardiovascular disease, dementia, etc., incorporating a tablespoon of ground flaxseed every day is one of the easiest and best things you can do. It is a source of what are called phytoestrogens. So those are plant-based sources that look like estrogen. And that is a way to naturally increase our estrogen. So our body is thinking like, oh, okay, I have estrogen in my body. Yeah, so that can be productive. You know, there's huge like soy debate on like, should we be incorporating, excluding, etc. But typically, unless you have a genetic determinant for breast cancer, incorporating phytoestrogens, especially coming from soy, is very protective against reducing your risk for things like breast cancer, breast disease, cardiovascular disease, dementia.
Yeah. Okay, all the things we just talked about are the reason that ovulation is clearly very important and the main event of our cycle. You know, the reason we have a cycle is to reproduce. Ovulation is the event that allows us to reproduce. And without ovulation, we have higher risk for a lot of other long-term health issues. So I think this is just like, take a moment and really tune in, see if you're ovulating, if you are not on birth control. And I just think it's so interesting to be aware of whether you're trying to conceive or trying to avoid. It's really, really like becoming in tune with your body.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that one of the easiest ways, this is not scientific, this is just my opinion, to know if you're ovulating is when you go to the bathroom and you wipe, if it's super slippery, like, you know, those wipes that you have sometimes and you're just like, whoa, like I almost hit myself in the face with the toilet paper.
Yeah.
like if it's really slippery, you're probably ovulating or around ovulation.
That, or if you're really horny, if your libido is up, you find your partner more attractive than normal, if you feel more confident, if your skin is really glowy and you just feel more energized, you're like, I want to go for a run today. I don't know what's gotten into me. Like, you might be ovulating.
Yeah. One of my friends was like, yeah, I always knew I was ovulating because I felt like a porn star.
Exactly. Like, let's go.
Okay, so we've ovulated, and now what is next?
Yep. So even ovulation is an event that really takes place during the luteal phase. So again, if we're talking about phases, etc., the luteal phase is the second half of our cycle that starts when we ovulate. So our progesterone is going to increase, as we talked about. Progesterone is actually produced by the exterior. It's called the corpus luteum. So that follicle that was carrying the egg, once the egg is released, the leftover piece is called the corpus luteum. And that itself is actually what produces progesterone. So that calming effect that we get, our energy needs actually jump tremendously. So if you are in the weeks leading up to your cycle, your bleed, and you feel way hungrier, you're really craving carbohydrates especially, that is a telltale sign that you are in your luteal phase.
Yeah, I can tell I'm in my luteal phase right now because I was like, I must make bagels at this very moment. Yeah. Like my body has just been craving carbs. And I mean, the luteal phase is so interesting because I feel like it's the one that people dread the most.
Yeah. I mean, if you experience a lot of PMS symptoms, then dreading your luteal phase is very real. This is when you might feel like garbage. You might have breast tenderness. You might have acne. You might have crazy cramps, mood changes, depression. All of those crummy things that we associate with being a menstruating person are most likely to happen at this time. And that is because of there's a like a second wave of estrogen bump that occurs during this cycle. And also we talked about that little bit of inflammation and such that is happening in order to prepare for your actual bleed, that deep like back pain or pelvic floor discomfort, etc. These are common, but they're not normal and they don't have to happen. So I really, really want to make that clear here, even though everyone might say like, oh, I always have cramps or it's common, but it is not normal and it doesn't have to happen. So please know that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would love to hear your opinion on this. Some cramping is normal, right? As long as it's not like, I guess that's more when you're like menstruating, because like your uterus has to cramp to shed on some degree. So you're going to feel some twinginess, but if it's like debilitating, that's not normal. Is that a correct statement?
Absolutely. Like if you can't get out of bed, if you're in the fetal position, if you're vomiting because you're in so much pain due to your cramping, yes, I would say like some twinging is normal. I actually wanted to mention this with ovulation too. We can have like a little bit of twinging. It's called middle schmerz, which I just love that word. And it happens on whichever side of your ovary is the one releasing the egg that month. So our ovaries take turns. One will ovulate one month, the next, the other will ovulate. And if you can really feel like a little twinge or some slight cramping around your ovary, that is the release of the egg, which I just think is so cool. So if you're I call these hyper feelers or people who are really, really in tune with their bodies, they might notice more of those sensations. Or like you said, the slight cramping leading up to our cycle, because yes, it is contracting. There is something going on there. It doesn't just magically shed. It's not like a veil dropping. There is work going on in there.
Yeah. Okay, going back up to the luteal phase, I feel like for me, the biggest mind shift that happened, like I said, a lot of people dread this phase because their energy is lower and you can have more symptoms during this phase if you're someone who experiences PMS. But when I changed my mentality from being like, I need to always be able to operate at the same level and be like, constantly super motivated and pushing, be able to like work out hard and get a lot done and all of those things, you know, kind of like hustle, if you will. But when I actually changed my mentality and accepted that in this phase, we are going through, like you said, progesterone creates a calming effect. And so this is kind of like a winter every month for us. It is a slower season. And to be able to just see that for what it is and appreciate it and know that like, okay, I get to slow down and reflect and take a little bit of time during this week, it kind of changed a lot for me. Instead of dreading it, I was like, oh, I get to recuperate. Like I get to turn inward and have some downtime, and that sounds nice. So it is interesting just bringing like small awarenesses to the different needs that we have in these cycles, which we'll get into in another episode for sure about like cycle alignment and cycle syncing. But it is really interesting how like you can just change how you feel about it a little bit by knowing more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the way that we speak to our bodies too also really freaking matters. So by you saying having just this mindset shift and using it as like an opportunity, not that we need an excuse or a permission slip to slow down, but if you can start seeing how that benefits you and tell your body like it's okay. If you don't feel up for something, it's okay. You're not failing. You're not lazy. Like changing the way that you speak to your body, it is listening. It's going to respond to those things. And that is so important.
Yeah, so important.
I did want to share one thing. So our serotonin actually dips during this phase. So serotonin is what's called a neurotransmitter. So neurotransmitters are like the chemical signaling going on. So are hormones. But this one is what makes us feel good. So if you notice, even during this phase, your luteal phase, I notice that I want to buy more things when I am in my luteal phase. Like, I had two impulse buys this week, and it's just this quick hit of serotonin because I am also in my luteal phase. But even knowing, like, I'm seeking those things is for a reason. It's for a physiological reason. It's not, again, a lack of willpower or other things. So our body craves carbohydrates for that reason also, because carbohydrates also help to increase our serotonin.
That's super interesting. Now I'm going to be hyper aware of that. Like when I'm making impulse purchases or posting something on social media for attention during this phase, you know, like those like serotonin boosts, that kind of thing. That's really, really interesting.
Exactly. Like our body craves simple carbs for that reason, like sugar, etc. But trying to stick to more of those complex carbohydrates, absolutely. So things like sweet potatoes, whole grains, focusing more on that, that's going to give you longer energy. You're not going to be riding this blood sugar roller coaster, all of those things that can actually make our PMS symptoms way worse. Caffeine, alcohol, sugar, especially during this time, is really going to impact your risk for PMS, cramping, acne, breast tenderness, all of the fun things.
Yeah, you just helped me plan my dinner tonight. Thank you so much. Perfect. I will be having the sweet potato kale salad.
Ooh, yummy. What's your protein?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. What will my protein be? If you guys haven't been following along, I've been doing a protein challenge on Instagram. So come say hi and check it out. But maybe we'll have to talk about that in an episode too, just like the benefits of higher protein diet for females. But okay, anything else about the phases of the menstrual cycle? I'm going to call them four phases. I like to split it up into four. There could be two, there could be three.
I do too. I like four. I like seeing them as independent events, independent phases. And we will definitely go into this when we talk about the cycle alignment, cycle syncing episode.
Amazing. And I think like one last thing I want to add is our body as the female reproductive system has a on average 28-day rhythm, right? So like we have these four phases every on average 28 days, whereas a male rhythm is a 24-hour clock, which I think is so interesting just because we're so often compared and, you know, science is done on one group, mostly men, and not the other. And we're just not that comparable. When it comes down to it, there's so much that makes us tick very differently, if you will. And so I think remember that, whether it's in the workplace or just like you and your partner, if you are married or in a relationship with a man, like it's very interesting the differences that are really apparent when you start to recognize month-long like cycle, daily cycle. And it's just that like allowed me to accept a lot of what was happening for my partner and how I was different.
Absolutely. This has been such a good episode. There's so much knowledge in here. Like, I can't wait for people to hear this.
Yeah, so fun. Please let us know. Come over to Instagram and drop us a comment telling us what the most mind-blowing thing is that you learned in this episode. And if you enjoyed listening, make sure you subscribe and rate and review so that we can help reach more people with this amazing information. And thank you, Nora, for bringing the freaking heat with this knowledge.
Thank you.
All right, guys, we will see you next week.